Hi, welcome back to Law and Legitimacy. This one's hot off the press. I don't know if you've heard about it yet, but Bill Cosby will soon be walking the street as a free man. That's right, you heard it here for the 14th time, but this will be the best time you hear it because I'll give you insight no one else can. But first, a word of thanks to Mike Boyer and the Kraft Carolina Legal Group. I met Mike the other day. He and his partner Cam traveled up to New York City and made a special side trip to New Haven, where I was able to take them for lunch. And here's what I learned. These are two young advocates who are dedicated, their clients, principled, and they've got good, healthy appetites. So come back to New Haven soon, guys. Thanks, Mike, for all your technical help. But let's turn to the Bill Cosby case. I mean, it is just a wowzer of a decision. I've been reading appellate court decisions for decades. I don't think I've read one quite like this. There are red asses in the prosecutor's office in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. And the only question I have is, how much is Pennsylvania going to pay Bill Cosby? What am I talking about? Recall the Bill Cosby case. He was convicted not long ago after two trials for the rape of Andrea Constand in 2004. Now, in the first trial, there was limited evidence against him. It was Ms. Constant's word against his, and a so-called uncharged misconduct witness. That is another woman who claimed to be sexually abused by Mr. Cosby. Jury couldn't decide in that case. In the second case, the trial court permitted five so-called uncharged misconduct witnesses to testify, and that tipped the balance against Mr. Cosby. He was then sentenced to a period of imprisonment of 3 to 10 years. But the question that the Pennsylvania Supreme Court addressed and used today to reverse the Cosby conviction is whether the prosecution, that is, whether the Commonwealth of the state of Connecticut violated Mr. Cosby's due process rights, that is, his right to fundamental fairness. In both trials, both the trial for which there was a hung jury and the trial in which he was convicted, and the court unequivocally said that the Commonwealth violated Mr. Cosby's due process rights and not only reversed his conviction, but barred the Commonwealth from trying him again with respect to Andrea Constant. So what we're going to do in today's episode is we're going to unpack this miscarriage of justice. Young lawyers listening to this, listen up. This is a cautionary tale about what you need to do to protect your client's rights. Old lawyers, listen up and chuckle. You're right all along. You can't trust the sovereign, that legal fiction that acts through its officers who often have feet of clay. You need to hold the sovereign to a higher standard. You need to get it in writing. And you need to bitch, moan, and take an appeal when the sovereign behaves like a thug. My compliments to Jennifer Bongean of New York. She took the Cosby appeal and won it. But quite frankly, she should have won it. In my view, a potted plant should have won this case, and the trial judge who permitted the events to occur that I'm about to describe ought to have his head examined. So sexual misconduct cases against the high and mighty fall into a depressingly similar pattern. Young women typically fall under the influence or thrall of an older man. And in order to get what they want, they find themselves in compromising positions, and sometimes they compromise themselves. One could be cynical and say of these young women that they got what he came for in these instances, but that would be to use language in a loose and casual way, unbefitting the dignity of this podcast. In the Constant case, what we have is a young woman who was interested in athletics and interested in a career in sports broadcasting. She was a former professional basketball player, and she was employed as the district of basketball operations at Temple University. In that capacity, she made contact with Cosby, who agreed to advance her career in broadcasting. And as is so often the case in these cases of young women aligning themselves with older men, she found herself in compromising and ultimately compromised positions in his home. In 2004, allegedly, Cosby gave her some pills to take the edge off. She drank some wine. She woke up the next morning not quite sure what happened. It took her a year to decide she'd been raped, and then she went to local law enforcement officers in Canada where she was living, who then went to local law enforcement officers in Philadelphia, who then went to a Pennsylvania prosecutor. And that prosecutor did an investigation and concluded that based on the information he had, there was insufficient evidence to convict Mr. Cosby. In other words, the prosecutor did his job. A prosecutor's job is not simply to be an advocate, but also, as the Supreme Court notes, to be a minister of justice. The prosecutor in that case, however, cannot do what Ms. Constant could do, and that would be to sue Bill Cosby for money damages. So believing the only way that Ms. Constant would get justice would be if she were to bring an action against Mr. Cosby, and realizing that if she were to bring an action and there were pending criminal charges against Mr. Cosby could frustrate her desire to get Cosby's testimony by pleading the Fifth Amendment, the prosecutor decided that on behalf of the Commonwealth, he would make a decision that Mr. Cosby would never be prosecuted for his events with Andrea Constant. The result was there was no jeopardy or risk of jeopardy, and Cosby was free to testify. Now, for those of you who are new to the law and haven't been to law school or are just learning the law, let's talk about the Fifth Amendment privilege. The Fifth Amendment to the United States Constitution says, among other things, that a person can't be compelled to offer testimony against themselves, or themselves singular. As interpreted by the courts, what this means is that you can't be compelled or forced to give testimony that has a tendency or tends to incriminate you. So if I'm deposed and I'm asked questions about an event that would tend to incriminate me, I can validly plead the Fifth Amendment. And in pleading the Fifth, I'm placing myself obviously beyond testimonial reach. In a criminal courtroom, a person is not supposed to take the Fifth in the jury's presence because it's such an inflammatory event. Jurors infer guilt on the basis of that, and it's deemed to be unduly prejudicial. It is not, however, unusual for a defendant in a civil case to be compelled to take the Fifth. In cases like that, if you want to get an adverse inference, if you want to get an instruction from the court that a person's evocation of their Fifth Amendment right can be held against them, you have to ask what are called pinpoint questions. Is it true, you know, that you robbed the bank? And I deny it. You know, were you driving the car that the robbers escaped from the bank with? I deny it, or I plead the Fifth. And then you might be able to get an adverse inference. This is a case, it's probably a one-off in American history. So if you defend people accused of sex crimes, don't read the whole decision looking for a clue on how to win your next case, you're not going to find it. This is a case that falls under the category of, and this is a sophisticated legal category, I'm going to give everybody a moment, I'm going to count to five while you get a pen and paper because I want you to get a paper, I want you to write this down. This is a case that is best summarized as too cute for words. I do not know what the Pennsylvania district attorney was thinking. He suggested to Constant that she bring a civil action against Cosby. Then he decided that the Commonwealth would never prosecute Cosby, thus eliminating the Fifth Amendment privilege and making it possible for her to depose him. Because if there was no pending criminal action, then he had no reason to plead the Fifth because nothing he said would tend to expose him to prosecution. Why he made this deal, and then he memorializes it in a press release, which he then signs and releases to the public. And that press release says, you know, the Commonwealth intends never to prosecute Cosby. I don't know. I mean, this business about negotiating at arm's length with prosecutors through press releases might play in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, but I don't think it does in the rest of the United States. And here's a practice pointer. If you're going to get involved in negotiations with another lawyer and the negotiations matter, get it in writing and make it part of a court record so that years later there will be no dispute about what the agreement was. Regular listeners of this podcast know that a good friend of mine, F. Lee Bailey, died not long ago. Bailey ended up being held in contempt of a Florida judge's orders and actually lost his law license over his failure to get in writing an agreement with Florida federal prosecutors involving the handling of the estate of a drug dealer that Mr. Bailey was representing. And when he later tried to call the government up and say, look, you know, I need you to testify on my behalf. I'm not withholding assets from the court in defiance of a court order. The prosecutor said, we don't remember. And Bailey found himself on the wrong side of the bars and ultimately disbarred, a tragic outcome. Mr. Cosby found himself incarcerated and locked up in prison as a result of the failings of his lawyer and the failure of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Because years later, after Miss Constance sued Bill Cosby, after she took his deposition four times, after he made various admissions about his conduct with her that were inculpatory and did not help him in the criminal case, after he settled the civil case against her, paying her $3.38 million as a settlement, after he did all of this in reliance on what the top prosecutor investigating his case on behalf of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania promised him, the prosecutor's successors decided that that promise wasn't binding. And they offered into evidence and as evidence Mr. Cosby's prior statements in the prosecution involving Miss Constance. His lawyers moved for an order barring them from doing so, and a trial court judge said, no, this wasn't a sufficiently solemnized promise. It was a little vague. Besides, the prosecutor didn't have the authority to grant immunity. There's a specific Pennsylvania statute that says if you're going to grant immunity to a person from prosecution, a judge has to approve it. A judge didn't approve it, and therefore this ambiguity works against Bill Cosby. And notwithstanding the promises the prosecutor made to him on behalf of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, notwithstanding the legal advice he was given by his lawyers that he could trust this, his words were going to be used in the criminal trial involving Andrea Constant. When I read that decision a year or so ago, as the trial was unfolding, or a couple of years now, time flies when you're getting old, I thought it smelled like bullshit. And I think to the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania, it was held to be bullshit. The fact of the matter is, the prosecutor made a promise. He may not have solemnized it in the way that he should have. He may not have reduced it to writing. He may not have seen judicial approval of it. Cosby's lawyers may have been errant and casual in letting a handshake take the place of a formal agreement and judicial approval. But the fact of the matter is that fundamental fairness to Bill Cosby required that Pennsylvania be held to the benefit of the bargain it struck. Because as a result of striking that bargain, Cosby testified. He was held out to public scorn. He was tried not once but twice in a criminal case. And what's more, he paid money in a civil case that he may never have had to pay for had he not agreed to testify in the first instance. Because the case against Andrea Constant was always going to be weak if it was left based only on her own word. What was necessary to shore it up was in part Bill Cosby's testimony. And that testimony was achieved and received under false pretenses fostered by the state of Connecticut. Let me read to you some stirring language from the Pennsylvania Supreme Court involving its interpretation of this transaction. These authorities obligate courts to hold prosecutors to their word, to enforce promises, to ensure that defendants' decisions are made with a full understanding of the circumstances, and to prevent fraudulent inducements of waivers of one or more constitutional rights. Prosecutors can be bound by their assurances or decisions under principles of contract law or by application of the fundamental fairness considerations that inform and undergird the due process of law. The law is clear that based upon their unique role in the criminal justice system, prosecutors generally are bound by their assurances, particularly when defendants rely to their detriment upon those guarantees. Amen, hallelujah, I say. I mean, we need some of these justices on the Pennsylvania Supreme Court to make it up to the U.S. Supreme Court. Now, here's where it gets interesting. The early press accounts make it sound as though Cosby might be retried and Pennsylvania prosecutors are considering their options. They don't have that option. Here's what the Pennsylvania Supreme Court said, quote, having identified a due process violation, we must ascertain the remedy to which the Cosby is entitled. And that remedy is specific performance. That is, they can't prosecute him for Andrea Constant's claims ever again. That case is over, and it ended decisively today when this Pennsylvania Supreme Court issued its rulings. Now, what happens next? The Pennsylvania Supreme Court made a ruling based on its interpretation and understanding of federal due process. So it arguably is the case that the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania can ask the United States Supreme Court to review this decision, and that it can ask the U.S. Supreme Court to basically say on this record, was there a sufficient basis to believe that the Commonwealth had bound itself promises to Mr. Cosby. In the absence of any real significant writing, in the absence of any court hearing, in the absence of the statutory approval of an immunity deal as required under Pennsylvania law, in the absence of all of that, the court, prosecutors can ask the Supreme Court to hold that the Pennsylvania Supreme Court actually made up a dangerous new precedent. And that precedent would allow vague agreements, vague understandings as between counsel, to substitute for the clear and distinct and precise promises and contours of what the law requires. I don't think the U.S. Supreme Court would hear it. You know, Justice Thomas might. You know, he is a very much a formalist and wants every jot and tittle honored. And he may say that no matter how outrageous Bill Cosby's pubic hairs were on the Coke can, sorry to do that to you, Justice Thomas, no matter how outrageous the allegations against the state of or the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, Cosby's real remedies are against his lawyer. I mean, think about it. You don't have an explicit agreement or something approved by a judge, and but you've got a handshake agreement and a press release with a prosecutor, and you're sitting next to your client in a civil action, and you're not asserting the Fifth Amendment. Practice pointers to young lawyers. If you've got a client who is in jeopardy or potentially in jeopardy based on what he is saying, you want to assert the Fifth Amendment privilege. Make the other side get a judicial ruling that he either doesn't have it or does, whatever the basis may be. But to operate on a wink and a nod, as was done in the Bill Cosby case, exposes your client unnecessarily to risk. In any case, congratulations to Ms. Bongean. Welcome back to the world, Mr. Cosby. You know, I don't know, Bill Cosby, if you're a sexual cat or not. What I read in the paper suggests that you got more than your share of what young women were having to offer, and shame on you for taking it under circumstances that were murky and vague. But I've never walked a mile in Bill Cosby's shoes. I haven't had gratuitous, you know, sex thrown at me as a consideration for what I have to offer. And I'm grateful for that. But I think if Bill Cosby took the low-hanging fruit, well, his hand should have been slapped, and it has been. But Me Too notwithstanding, this prosecution was too much. Here's what the case did not stand for, and this is a little disappointing. The law, and that is the use of five so-called uncharged misconduct witnesses in the second trial. Was that unduly prejudicial? That issue was briefed, but because the court decided the unique issue, that is the breach of the agreement with the Commonwealth, was sufficient to reverse the conviction, it did not reach what it didn't have to decide. That's a principle of appellate parsimony. You don't do more work than you have to do. But the issue is as follows. Due process says that we try the crime, not the person. In other words, the state makes an allegation against someone that they've violated the law. That violation usually requires the state to prove specific elements of the offense. In the case of sexual misconduct, that a person intentionally engaged in conduct that violated another person's body, in the case of rape, and that would be sexual assault. You don't prove, and that's on a defendant-by-defendant basis, or withdrawn a complainant-by-complainant basis. If he raped Andrea Constant, it doesn't mean that his treatment of other women back to the beginning of time is necessarily relevant. But there, and so we say, propensity evidence is never usable against a defendant in a crime. You can't show that because someone's a bad person and has engaged in other bad acts, they're more likely than not to have committed the crime at issue. Unless... And this is why lawyers make the big bucks and why all lawyers look tired, because we spend all of our time reading these bizarre cases and mastering arcane rules, unless it falls into an exception to the propensity evidence rule. And that exception permits the use of uncharged misconduct, that is, conduct involving a person that's not charged in the case, if that goes to show knowledge, intent, plan, preparation, opportunity, motive, identity, absence of mistake, common scheme or plan. And the states have a variety of locutions for describing this phenomenon. In Cosby's second trial, the court held that the prior acts of sexual misconduct against five women could be used to show that Cosby probably did, or more likely than not, did commit the acts against Ms. Constant, because the acts with respect to those other women showed a common scheme or plan. In other words, drugging a woman, getting her groggy, and then taking advantage of her. Every state permits the use of this sort of uncharged misconduct, sort of propensity evidence in sexual assault cases. In Connecticut, my home state, the courts have even gone so far as to say that in sexual misconduct cases, the rules against propensity evidence will be relaxed in a case called State versus DeJesus. I had hopes in the Cosby case that the Pennsylvania Supreme Court might be willing to trim that back. Instead, it didn't need to, and it left for another day the extent to which propensity evidence of that sort can be used. So what Cosby's decision involves is an entirely unique set of circumstances which will have almost no precedential value around the country. It contains a cautionary tale, and that cautionary tale says don't be seduced by the status of your clients or ambiguous promises by the state. You're defending someone against the state, in this case, the state of or the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. If the Commonwealth promises you something, get it in writing, get the sovereign, get a judge to sign off on what the sovereign says and make a record. Otherwise, you might find yourself like Bill Cosby or like Bill Cosby's lawyers, wondering how this manifest injustice was permitted to blossom into a conviction. Kudos to the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania's Supreme Court. Its decision of June 30th, 2021 is must reading all 80 pages of it for any criminal defense lawyer. Read it, learn. Congratulations, Bill Cosby. America's dad is back. Thanks for listening to Law and Legitimacy. If you liked what you heard here, give me a 5-star rating. If you didn't, well, send me a nasty note at npattis@pattislaw.com, and maybe I'll read it, maybe I won't.